Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we scale one of the great structures of the mind,
the Wall of Sound. Okay, happy Monday, Patrick.
Happy Monday, Jim.
Before we get started here on Rockin' the Suburbs, I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I am Patrick Foster.
I don't know that we want to go into great detail on this. That's up to you. But I just want to let the listeners know that you have been convalescing lately.
Oh, yeah.
from an accident.
That's right.
I guess minor to medium accident. Nothing serious, right?
No.
But serious enough that if people wanted to send you, free records,
to help you feel better.
Yeah, to make you feel better. I think it's that serious, right? So people can totally do that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, anything on the Impulse label from the 60s would be fantastic. That'd be really, really good. It would really help me feel better.
Yeah.
I had a small bike riding accident. And I will say this, it wasn't my fault really, because it was just a malfunction with the bike and it was kind of weird what happened. I won't bore anybody with it, but I will tell you this story. Years and years and years ago, I had another bike accident. But this one was completely my fault. I was over at band practice, wingtip slow practice, and, we had just finished and, in all honesty, I figured like if I ride my bike over to practice, I can have a few extra beers and I don't have to worry about getting in the car and being irresponsible like that. And, so I was riding, I bought this bike and, first time I tried to ride it home, I made it to the end of Andy's driveway and I crashed.
Oh my goodness.
Because I had too many beers.
Yeah.
And they all got a real good laugh out of it, until I stood up and I was bleeding all down my leg and arm. And then they came to my rescue. But in this case, I didn't make a bad decision about getting on a bike.
Right. So. No. So you're all right. So that's good.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm fine.
But music always helps. So, send those records and tapes.
Yeah, definitely. Get those over to me.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, today's topic, this was a little bit sensitive, I would say. It's a little bit different, I think, for how we usually deal with some big music figures when they pass. And so I'm specifically talking about the recent death of Phil Spector, the legendary producer, mostly with a bunch of 60s like girl groups and things like that, but also, famously the Beatles and later on the Ramones and so on. Uh-huh. And I think it cannot be denied the impact he had on pop music, right?
Oh my God, no.
And so we'll talk a little bit about that. But a controversial figure because not only, later in life he was actually convicted of murder and was serving time in prison. So there's that. But even beyond that, there were also always stories about his abuse of women and his brandishing handguns in certain circumstances, things like that. So I think what we want to do is, you and I talked about this, and let's just kind of set that all aside. Let's focus on the music and really just talk about what he did with music. And also we put out a call to some listeners through social media to just talk about like their favorite song that was produced by Phil Spector. And let's just focus in on that a little bit.
Sounds good.
I'll just kind of briefly tell how I got into Phil Spector's music. It was, I think, like anyone who listened to radio at all, growing up, whatever, you certainly knew some of these songs from the 60s. You just couldn't, you couldn't avoid a song like Da Do Ron Ron, for example, right?
Totally.
By the Crystals, right? Like that was just part of American culture. But I kind of, just lumped it in with oldies music because at that point, in the 70s and in the 80s, that was stuff from the 60s and it really sounded of a different era. It sounded of that older era of a previous generation. And I not really knowing that much about the history of popular music at that time would just sort of lump it in with Motown or that, the Philly, R&B soul stuff, whatever. Like to me, it was all just kind of like oldies music. Right.
Yeah.
And it was later on when I really started to learn about the history of, rock and roll and so on, I would say in college, that I really understood, you know, what was the Phil Spector wall of sound and what that meant, right? Mm-hmm. And I it went so far as to get a, I should have brought it down here to show you on the camera here, but I bought a box set called Back to Mono. Do you remember when that came out?
Yep, remember that very well.
It was a compilation that came out, I want to say like in the late 80s or so, four CDs that just collected a bunch of those 60s hit, and maybe some not so big of hits, but all those 60s girl groups stuff. Yep. And there were like three CDs compilation, and then the fourth one was the A Christmas Gift to You, which was the famous Phil Spector Christmas album that was really huge and just sounds fantastic. But to give people a sense of the Phil Spector wall of sound, I'm just going to play a song here. This was sort of a minor hit, I think. It is by the Crystals, although it's kind of sort of not. I'll explain that in a minute. It's called He's Sure the Boy I Love.
Always dreamed the boy I love would come along, and he'd be tall and handsome, rich and strong. Now that boy I love has come to me, but he sure ain't the way I thought he'd be.
All right, there you go. That is He's Sure the Boy I Love. And the reason why I wanted to play that particular song, and there are many that have the sort of essential wall of sound, but it's just that gives you a really good sense of how he produced records, right? So
yeah, totally.
There's just kind of a rumble that's going on in the background. Yeah, there's just kind of a bunch of stuff that's happening there, but it's really, really hard as a listener to pick it apart. Like, you don't know what all is going on back there, who's playing what, you know. It's so different from, I think, probably when you and I really started to become music fans, where we really understood like the different parts, right? You got your singer, you got the lead guitarist, maybe there's a rhythm guitarist, right? There's the bass and the drums. It all makes perfect sense. You can like listen to a record and sort of like hear the different parts in these wall of sound recordings that Phil Spector, you know, I don't know if pioneered or at least perfected, right? Is it's just such this like blend of instrumentation that you can't even possibly start to totally comprehend it, right? It starts to blow your mind when you really start to listen to it, right? And he would just throw more and more in there, but maybe that's not even the right word, but it was like, because that makes it sound like it's just messy, but it's not really. I think it's all by design, but it was like he wanted it to just be this like sonic blast of music, and it works just so well. And this was 1962, so this is really still very early on in the history of pop music. I mean, think about 1962, you're not that far removed from like the Sam Phillips style of recording, right? Which was totally not this at all. You know, it was very kind of sparse, and he loved the idea of sort of like the perfect imperfection or whatever, right? Like with Phil Spector, recording in L.A. with all these studio musicians who later became known as the Wrecking Crew, there was a real precision, I think, that went into it. but to the point where the average person, you know, couldn't quite comprehend what was happening, I think. You know, does that make sense? I don't know.
It does. Yeah. And I think, you know, what I'll say really quick is that I got into this music through his famous Christmas album,
right?
When I was working at the record store. And then later, as I learned more and more about music history and became obsessive about it, it was like, there's Phil Spector, there's the Wall of Sound. You just ran into it everywhere. Like you said, the influence is so pervasive. But to put a kind of an emphasis on your point, which I totally agree with, is Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, who was very noted for trying to make these perfect, crisp, records, right? Every note in place, like, let's just play it perfect on Pet Sounds, and eventually got so obsessed with it, that he couldn't finish, his masterpiece.
The next one. Yeah, yeah.
Right. But he was hired by Phil Spector to play on the Christmas album, but Phil Spector never used his contribution because he just didn't swing in that kind of rough way that Phil Spector wanted. Yet Phil Spector was Brian Wilson's hero as a record producer. So fascinating the way all that developed.
I think people know the story of how, you know, Brian Wilson was sort of constant competition with two entities. One would be Phil Spector as a producer, and the other would just be the Beatles in terms of what they were.
Yep.
What they were doing.
Their album statements.
Yes, in terms of studio recording, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
To the point where it just, drove him to have his own mental struggles, right?
Anyway. Yeah.
But you can, obviously, in an album like Pet Sounds, you can hear the influence of the Wall of Sound for sure. And then, right. I mean, I think even somebody like Springsteen, the Born to Run album, for example.
Yeah, totally.
I think it's very Phil Spector.
Completely influenced,
inspired in
that.
A lot of ways. Listen to the single "Born to Run." I think you're going to hear a lot of the kind of like layering and just adding more instruments in there and really creating something that can be tough to, like I said, kind of pick apart.
Yep.
Okay, so I want to circle back on why I said it's kind of sort of the Crystals, just to give you a sense too of kind of the production, the record making, machine, the beast that had to be fed there with Phil Spector was. There were songs released under the name The Crystals, even though they were recorded by a group called The Blossoms, which was led by Darlene Love. And this is an example of that. The Crystals would be out on the road, but he would need like more a new Crystals single. So he would put others just in to perform the song and then release it as The Crystals, right? And then they'd have to learn the song and be able to perform it live, right? You know what I mean? So Darlene Love was one of the mainstays, I think, of a lot of the studio recordings, either under her name or others. A fantastic singer. And that was also too, despite all of the stuff kind of like going on in the background, there would always just be a great vocalist above, like, piercing through all of that. And it really was tremendous, a combination. Right. So, okay, let's get to the calls here. Let's start here with Mackenzie.
Jim and Patrick, it's Mackenzie Crenshaw here. Excuse my voice. I am probably sick. But I'm here to talk about Phil Spector, who, along with being batshit crazy, also is probably one of the most kind of important figures in the development of my music fandom and my music taste. Be My Baby by the Ronettes was such a like monumental discovery for me as a 13-year-old. I remember hearing it and just being like, what am I listening to? And having no real source of reference for that type of really lush, full, echoey type of recording style. And that really introduced me to being into production and figuring out how the sounds I was hearing came to be, especially in a lot of the records of the 60s and into the early 70s. I also really love River Deep Mountain High by Ike and Tina Turner. Another one of those songs that you're just like, what am I listening to? What is going on? It still gets me sometimes if I'm listening with like headphones or I have it on my stereo system. It's just like so full and in your face. And I really just appreciate that kind of like hit 'em where it hurts type of production. And one of the ones that I don't actually hear people talk about a lot, but is interesting and also was really appealing to me as a kid, was End of the Century, the album he produced for the Ramones. There's a few songs on that that really are pretty good. It is just weird. I mean, maybe not. The Ramones, you know, were into that kind of 60s pop stuff, but it was just, again, as a teenager, you're like, this is really cool. Like, what is this? This is, nothing sounds like this anymore. So yeah, crazy man, crazy, crazy man, but really awesome music. And I think I owe a pretty big debt to him as far as discovering a lot of the pop music that came after. Hope you guys are doing well, staying safe, washing your hands, wearing a mask, all that. See you next time.
Love to hear from Mackenzie Crenshaw.
Awesome to hear from her. Glad to know she's still out there listening. And one of the best and nicest people we've met, I think. And one of the biggest musical curiosities or appetite for discovering and listening to music in both new and historical context. So,
yeah,
man, the way she described Spector, perfect. I think that's exactly the way to think about him. But it's so interesting that he influenced Mackenzie too at her age, and he was so important, or the records that he made were so important to her. But you know, generations before that, I mean, the whole reason he got involved with, you know, the Ramones and the Beatles is because of their deep love.
Yes.
You know, for that music, and people were like still trying to find a little piece of that magic. You know, End of the Century is a pretty fascinating album. I think you're probably a bigger Ramones fan than me, but I agree with what Mackenzie said.
The funny thing about the Ramones, I think, is, Joey Ramone was the big Phil Spector guy in the group, but and that record is an interesting listen. I mean, it's, you know, I think they had some struggles and getting it done, but it's really compelling, I think, to listen to the whole thing. But what I was going to say is the Ramones, you can hear the Phil Spector influence even before that, even when they were just doing their basic, you know, guitar, bass, drums, just in that sort of buzzsaw attack of the guitars. It was the whole idea of like fill up every space.
There you go.
With, yeah. Uh-huh. You know, and so they were kind of in a way creating their own, you know, wall of sound.
Right.
Before they did that. Like officially, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Also, River Deep Mountain High. That's a good song, man. That's a song I think doesn't get enough attention. But anyway. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, that was a flop for Spector. And, you know, that arguably went along, you know, was a contributing factor into his batshit craziness.
Yes, that's right.
Mackenzie said.
It's so good. All right. Here's the next call.
Hey, Jim and Pat. Jason from New York. Responding to Jim's Facebook message about Phil Spector, crazy guy, but that Emmerman said obviously some great music. My two favorite things: George Harrison's "All Things Must Pass." It's just one of the best albums, probably by the Beatles in a solo capacity. The other one is Darlene Love from the Christmas album, Christmas Please Come Home. There was nothing better when Letterman was on the air. I think it was only in his CBS days. when they would do, when he would have her on, like right around Christmas for, her to sing it with the, Paul Schaefer and the Most Dangerous Orchestra, started out with just the basic band and just kept on building and building. I remember the last one, he had strings, he had horns, he had a huge section, and, was always something to look forward to during the Christmas season, knowing that at some point David Letterman was gonna, and Paul Schaefer Band was gonna have on, Darlene Love to do, Christmas Please Come Home. So, any event, that's me chiming in. Hope all you guys are well. Hope the interns are well, and, speak to you all later.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, Jason, man. Good to hear from you, and love those insights.
Yeah, I think a lot of people later on became familiar with Darlene Love and that song through the annual appearance on Letterman show, yep. Right? And yes, yep. Paul would try to recreate that kind of wall sound by just adding more and more instruments, yeah, and bigger string section, you know, that's more right, horns, all of that, right? It's, it has more, to have that.
Yeah.
It has to have all of that, right?
Totally, man. And so glad Jason mentioned All Things Must Pass. You know, at the time George Harrison made that record, I mean, if you're not familiar with it, folks, it's fantastic. And really try to go out if you can and find a vinyl copy. You can often find them in the record shops, and they're not that expensive, an original copy. And if you get the one with the poster, it's even better. But it's a record at the time. There was a lot of English musicians in the late 60s, talking around like 68. You know, I think that's when it was made, or it was released in 70, but I think he started making it in 69, 70, late 68. But there's a lot of English musicians that were really getting influenced by, some of the stuff that Dylan had recorded with the band. And it was, you know, put out on a demo disc by Albert Grossman, Dylan's manager, the songs they were cutting at Big Pink. And he wanted people to cover them because he wanted to keep revenue coming in for Dylan, you know, as a songwriter. But those songs started getting around, and people started finding out about the band. And also Fairport Convention was playing a very folk kind of influenced style of music, English folk music. And Harrison's record kind of takes a lot of those threads and ties them up all together with the beautiful, sweet Beatles pop sensibility that he had as, you know, a genius songwriter in a band with two of the most genius songwriters of all time. You know, I'm just trying to get more songs on the albums, you know. But it's a masterpiece. It's a wonderful, wonderful record.
It really is.
Yeah.
To me, this is a triumph of Phil Spector working with a Beatle. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people do not like the production on the final Beatles album, Let It Be.
Yeah,
what became right. the final Beatles album, Let It Be. And a lot of times when people were sort of pointing to Phil Spector's work, a lot of times people would immediately point to that and say, well, that was a miss. You know, mm-hmm. and so, but yet, right around that same time period, it worked really well here with George Harrison. So I don't know what the dynamics were exactly caused that to occur.
But, I guess part of it, too, is you have to think about what Spector was given to work with.
Yeah.
Because there was basically the band was fractured in a way that was never going to be repaired at that point when they were trying to cut those sessions. And I think Billy Preston was kind of the fifth Beatle at that time and all that stuff,
yeah.
too. But, I think when All Things Must Pass came out, it was dismissed a little bit by some critics as being too long and, not really focused. But, man, it just has grown in stature over time as a real masterpiece.
Totally.
Great shout by Jason.
Okay. All right. One more call here.
What's up, guys? It's Bobby Padovic. Phil Spector, I just have to say two words, and that's the Ramones. And a few more words. Do you remember Rock and Roll Radio? I think that's such an amazing example of what Phil Spector could do as a producer. And that was the kind of band that I think for me and maybe for a lot of other people, the Ramones, I'd never really listened to them like seriously or in depth. It was always kind of like, yeah, they're a great punk band, whatever. But that song really showed, like, it really brought out the emotion in the band, all of just like the nostalgic vibes, the emotion, everything that the Ramones kind of were all about. So we can remember Phil for that song and many others. Thanks, guys.
This is Rock and Roll Radio. Come on, let's rock and roll with the Ramones.
Bobby Padovic. Thank
yes.
you, Bobby.
And he's right. Probably geez. Among, all the songs on that End of the Century album, that's the one that you really point to and say, there's the yeah. perfect sort of blend of like Phil Spector production with what the Ramones could do in terms
right.
of like in writing in that same kind of style. And it's a ode to, pop music and listening, to the radio with the covers over your head and all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah,
being a
totally.
Kid and loving, rock and roll. Right. So it's,
yeah.
it just blends perfect. Everything about that is just, that's a perfect pop song. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Without a doubt. And, like you said, there's some misses, some wild misses on there and some things that kind of work, but that one, yeah, it's a perfect home run, like smash, grand slam, beautiful, beautiful call.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks to everyone who called. We appreciate
thanks.
It. And I would say, if you if you know, you know, you may know the Ramones stuff. You may know, you know, obviously the Let It Be album, All Things Must Pass, all that stuff. And maybe you know the Phil Spector Christmas album, that because that's become such a big thing. But if you're not so familiar with a lot of the early, mid-60s girl group stuff, the Crystals, the Ronettes, and so on, go back and check out that stuff because it's amazing. And I would suggest, and I think this is part of the reason why the Ramones really took to them as well, is I would say a lot of this stuff rocks just as hard as, you know, your best electric guitar band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's such like power in a lot of these songs.
Well, well said, Jim, and definitely go back to some of that even really early stuff. I mean, to me, it's a fascinating record. Is the first one, you know, he really made his mark with, you know, and he was in the Teddy Bears. It's a song called To Know Him Is to Love Him. And Pretty Little Angel Eyes. I'm just looking at the list here. There's some really amazing early stuff that you may not know. You know, just incredible to sort of see how his production style and the way he put the pieces together with the voices and the instruments and found that thing he was striving for. I mean, you also point to a song like Instant Karma that he produced for Plastic Ono Band.
Yep.
That's a wild production and an incredible record there too, which, you know, just, I mean, it just goes on and on. So,
all right, let's get out of here. Tomorrow, I think we have something fun, so we'll get back to it. We'll do that. Okay. All right. And where should people send those records to you, Patrick?
Oh, yeah. You can send those records to us over at the Suburbs Pod P.O. Box, which we do check periodically. It's 800 West Broad Street, Box 6577, Falls Church, Virginia, 22040.
There you go. So we hope you're feeling better.
Thank you very much. Those impulse albums from the early 60s will definitely cheer me up.
Okay. All right, let's get out of here. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
When I was a little girl, I had a rag doll. Only doll I've ever owned. Now I love you just the way I love that rag doll.
This is really cool. Like, what is this? This is, nothing sounds like this anymore.